a really great show. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us anytime you want. This is how we do it. You call in and you say year, make, and model, and then we go to symptoms. It's important to do the symptoms first so that we can kind of get on the same page. You see, it doesn't do any good to talk about what others have said it is, because that won't really make any difference to me. What really makes a difference is the symptoms. The other day, a lady called me, and she said, "This is what I've got." And I had never heard of that before. And she had a particular light on in her dash that she described as white. And I've just never seen a dash light that's white. So I said, maybe let's look in the owner's manual. And she called back and she says, yes, it has to do with the four-wheel drive. And I said, okay, so we're home free. So the lesson here is oftentimes the manual will have an answer to your question. A couple of weeks ago, there was a gentleman that called up that he had lost his rear air conditioning controls in his Lexus. When I don't know, I can assure you that other people are going to know, and other people are going to make it really obvious with respect to what it is that we're going to do and what I missed. And frankly, there was a button upon the dash that turns on and off the rear air conditioning controls. So that's another example of where Mark doesn't know everything there is to know. Mark's been in the car repair business since 1968. I started out as a gas pump jockey at the Shell station in Tempe. And then we've morphed into, I think, 1979. We got into the actual garage and car repair stuff. So we've been around a while, and I'm a master technician. And certainly I have the ability to walk you through some of the things that you do. And more importantly, walk you through what to say and what not to say when you're at the front counter of your auto repair facility. I can also help you guide you on what are the markers for a good auto repair facility. I'll give you a good example. Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix is one of the shops that I believe in wholeheartedly. He's on my best car repair shops list, which is at marksalem.com.
Phil's been around. Henry.
Say that again.
Caller Henry.
Okay. And I'm gonna write that down because Jeremy, the producer, just whispered in my ear. And the idea is that these shops are the very best, and here's how I prove it to you. This is the proof. It says right on my website, if you have a problem with one of the shops that's listed on my best car repair shops list, and the Better Business Bureau or some other group that handles arbitration and mediation, if they say to the shop, you have to give them some money or fix their cars, and the shop doesn't do what they're told, then I kick them off my list. There's been three shops that have been removed from my list, two of them for ethical issues that I get to make that decision. And one of them was removed because he didn't make a payment, but then he was returned to the list after he did make the payment, and I guess it was just a financial situation that it was, at that particular time, it was beyond his ability. Nevertheless, I have really good shops, and Automatic Transmission Exchange is one of the good ones. Henry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Always a pleasure, Mark. Of course, I have the technical, and then I have the philosophical.
Okay.
So for the technical, how are you feeling about these OBD scanners? Now there's a million of them on the market. Some of them hook up to your phone. What do you think about those devices?
Well, it depends on how they're used. What's going on right now is what goes on with the parts stores, the do-it-yourself parts stores. You go in and they pull a code and then they sell you everything in the world. And in reality, a vacuum line has fallen off and you just spent $400 on this three-whisker kid's guess in the parking lot. As I've said many times before, the code tells you what state the problem's in. You still have to find the city, the street, and the house number. So that OBD stuff where you start to interface your phone, that's something that I'm not real happy about. It's not because it threatens my business. You see, Henry, after they spend a lot of money and they come into the shop, they're much more aware of the sophistication that we must have in order to pinpoint the problem. So I think they appreciate us more. But then there's other OBD stuff out there that, and folks, OBD is onboard diagnostics. And what you can do is you can monitor the engine performance with certain apps on your phone. If we could do that successfully, then all my guys would have those. And it is true that there are times you can use that. I'll give you a good example, Henry. An ABS light. The ABS light will come on, and it comes on only on a sharp right or left turn. Your OBD may give you, depending on the year, make, and model of your car, it may give you what's causing that in this respect. It says, I lost sight of the right front wheel on a left turn. Now, on a right turn, and the front tires turn different rates, whether it's a right turn or a left turn. As you can imagine, on a right turn, the right tire has a smaller arc than the left tire, left front tire. So it kind of helps you in that respect, but as far as fixing your cars, I think that's a waste of time. But as far as if you want to calibrate your speedometer and stuff like that, I'm okay with that.
And the philosophical, how far do you think you can or have you driven nonstop? I mean, I'm talking bathroom, brakes, gas. If you couldn't have all the gas you needed, how far do you think you can go?
Well, I already know the answer to that. We've been in a motorhome where our kids traveled in a motorhome for a couple weeks a year, and what we'd do is, and in the summertime, what we would do is we would just wander our way through the United States, but Mark would keep track how many miles he is from home. And so we would finally say, okay, well, we want to be home on Monday at 5. So Mark would say, okay, on Sunday, and I'm just using stupid numbers, on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the morning, this bus is starting up and we're heading home. And it's sit down, shut up, and be quiet because Dad is in the driving mode to get us home on time. And I know I can easily do 500 miles a day, which is 10 hours of driving. But I'm cheating.
Home. How about
I'm cheating because I'm going to the bathroom in a motorhome.
You're cheating. You got cruise control and a long stick?
No, I have a wife, and we, well, I'm not going to tell you how we trade places because somebody will find fault with that, but just suffice it to say that I can slide out, she can slide in, and I get to go use the bathroom, and I'm not allowed to drink another beer. But that's it.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you next week.
Caller, Bob.
All righty. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. What can they do for you?
Morning, Mark. If you're shopping for a used car on Craigslist and it says salvage title, is that a non-starter then?
Oh, that's a big no-no. That's a big no-no. Here's the problem. Insurance companies, many of the insurance companies won't insure them. They won't even do liability. They won't do nothing. So here's the deal. A salvage title vehicle back on the road, here's the scenario. Mark wrecks a Suburban, and the Suburban's worth $20,000. The repair on the Suburban is probably 15 or 16, so the insurance company will total it out. The car will go to an auction. Hopefully, it'll go to a wrecking yard, and the wrecking yard will then take the good pieces out of it and sell them. But somebody at the auction buys that Suburban, takes it home in his backyard, him and some of his buddies put it back together. Now, they don't have a frame rack. They don't know how to align the front end. They don't know how to test the safety systems other than they're going to pack a new airbag in the steering wheel. And then it comes out with a salvage title. There's no guarantee that that car, that truck, that car, whatever, has any of the safety systems. We don't know if the black box is going to work. We don't know if the airbox bag's going to pop. We don't even know if the seat belts are going to cinch you in an accident. We don't even know if you can do an avoidance maneuver where you're driving down the road, a little child comes out to the left on a bicycle, and you have to whip the steering wheel to the right to avoid them. All of that stuff. So, to be honest with you, if we know it's a salvage, we won't work on it either. We don't want to be in that legal food chain. But we won't even, if we know it's a salvage vehicle, and some people keep that from us, we won't even do a used car checkover on them. So, it's a bad deal. And then they're going to sell the Suburban to somebody that doesn't understand the salvage title. And they just figure the salvage title vehicle put back on the road is worth less than 25% of what it would otherwise be worth had it not been wrecked and repaired. Does that answer your question?
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Mark.
All righty. I get kind of passionate about some of these things. And it's because I'm giving you the same advice I give my mother and my friends and my neighbors and stuff like that. It's kind of important to understand the good and the bad in our industry. And obviously, we have some bad, but I would say 90% of us, all of us, are good people. 602-508-0960.
Next up is Dan.
And I didn't get you, Jeremy.
Next up caller is Dan.
Dan, you can just go live and fire up your mic. That would be easy for me, and I think they would enjoy talking to the producer who's in charge of me for 2 hours.
Done and done.
Okay, Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Brian, Mark. I'm getting tires from my car, and I'm getting 185/60 R14s, 82H. Okay, they are on back order because that's the exact size I want for that wheel. That's a manufacturer. But the when I called to order them, I had to order them because the size of the wheel. They don't carry them on stock, the brand I want. Well, anyway, they wanted to sell me 195s. I told the guy, I don't want 195s. I don't want to change any of the dynamics of the tire with the wheel. What would that 195 do to me, 195/60 R's?
It would just change your speedometer.
Yeah, I told the guy that. He said it wouldn't be much. I said, I don't want that. But I got what I wanted. But I just want to know why these people don't do the right thing and sell the right product, or just try to upsell me or downsell me or screw me over.
I can't read into their minds, but let me tell you, what you're describing is something that we do all the time. And let me give you an example. We're going to take this vehicle, this four-wheel drive, and raise it up and put some big tires on it. We have the ability to give the person a piece of paper and say, your speedometer is 10% off. So when you're doing 50, you're really doing 55, or you're doing 45. We'll explain all that to them. There's oftentimes somebody wants a wider tire or a taller tire or a tire that changes the load value of the tire. We have all these dynamics, but I don't like the idea of asking you to let me put a tire on your car because it serves me better than it does you. And I agree that under the circumstances that you just talked about, you'd be better off just to go someplace else or something like that. But there is a supply chain problem with tires right now. But I don't like the idea unless the customer is involved in that decision, the customer understands, and most of the time the customer comes in and says, after you lift my truck 6 inches, what are my options on my tires? And at that point, it's really a matter of what will fit within the tire well and not rub and not cause further problems. And, by the way, we're going to have a speedometer difference. And today we're learning how that we can oftentimes go into the ABS portion, the ABS folder of the onboard computer. And in the ABS folder, we can oftentimes change the circumference or the diameter of the tire. And I did take math in high school, so the circumference or the diameter times pi gives you the circumference. And no, I'm just going to brag about my math skills.
Now, on that tire, I requested the proper tire size. How does the 195 affect the 185? Is it a smaller sidewall or what?
No. The 185 is the height of the tire. And then you called it the 60 series is the width of the tire. And there is a relationship between the width and the height. And it's described in the 185/60, and then 14 is the wheel.
Yeah.
So the wide, for instance, you could have easily got a 185/70 14, and that would have been a narrower tire. And then you could have got a 205, which would have been a little wider tire.
Yeah, I told the guy, I'm sticking with the, and I got it, you know, I had to order the tire because they don't keep them on hand. I said, that's okay, I can wait. But I want the, I told him, 185 that goes with these wheels.
Yeah.
That's a manufacturer required, and that's what I want on the car, nothing different.
And you did right. You did right,
yeah,
now.
I just don't like it when they, well, because maybe something was on hand or in stock.
No, I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that. The 195 on top of the 185 would have been just a little bit in height and maybe a little bit in width, but it would have been insignificant, and I doubt if it would have changed your speedometer more than 4 or 5%. But the customer's always right, and that's what he forgot. And like I said at the beginning, I don't like it when we do something that's in our best interest as opposed to something that's not in the best interest of our customers. So 602-508-0960, we'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're in the first hour of the Mark Salem Show, where we talk about cars, and it's called Under the Hood right here on 960 The Patriot, KKNT. This portion of the show is brought to you by Blackwell Auto. Tom at Blackwell Auto, 40th Street and Greenway. The only shop I have in the northeast corner of the valley, which is virtually all of North Scottsdale and East Phoenix to the north, is Blackwell Automotive. He's really a good guy. He knows right from wrong. He's capable of diagnosing, as we all are, 95% of the stuff that comes in front of us. And he's good, and he's honest, and he has a really good staff, and he's been around a long time. And those are all things that are important to me. So if you live in that northeast portion of Phoenix and Scottsdale, and you don't have a repair shop that you absolutely love, then maybe have Tom do an oil change and see how you guys get along. So that's Blackwell Auto, 40th Street and Greenway. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Paul, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Hi. I've got a 98 Toyota Camry V6, and lately there's been some surging at lower power settings, like when there's no load. Accelerating, it's good. Starting, it's good. Going down the freeway, it's fine. But, like, idling through parking lots, I could feel a bit of surging.
Okay. Could it be an engine misfire where we lose a cylinder and then we get it back and we lose a cylinder and get it back?
It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like there's any missing. It feels smooth as it does that. I mean, it could possibly be that, but and I'm not noticing it, but
okay.
It doesn't feel that way.
All right. Surging is kind of what happens. Well, let me ask you this real quick. Are you using your air conditioning a lot?
Yes.
Okay. Where's your fan
speed? You know
speed?
What? Usually in the middle settings, like either middle low or middle high.
Okay. All right. Surging would be the air conditioning compressor going on and off, on and off, on and off. So the car RPM, your foot's steady, but the RPM would go higher and then lower, higher than lower. And if you're using your air conditioning a lot, usually when people use the low speed, we freeze up the unit, so we have lots of the on-off, on-off. And it does create a sensation that isn't there 8 months a year. So in your particular case, let's do some test driving here. I want you to run the fan speed on high. And if you get too cold, drop the window. But I want to know if it's still there, because if it's gone, then the air conditioning is cycling, and either it's freezing up or it's low on refrigerant.
All right.
So can you duplicate that on command?
I'll try it.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is if you took it to your repair shop, could you take one of their technicians out and show them exactly what it's doing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want you to try a different RPM range, so when it's happening, I want you to manually shift it down one gear. I want you to turn the air conditioning on and off, and those are the two things. If you walk in and say the air conditioning application means nothing, it doesn't change it. I turn the air off, I turn it on, and it doesn't change it, then you've just saved them a little bit of time and saved yourself a little diagnostic money.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, because you're right. I did notice it. I did not notice it in the wintertime. It's just been recently.
Well, I can tell you what it's not. Will the car do 65, 70, 80, 90?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, then it's not fuel delivery, right? And if you had an engine misfire, you'd have it pretty much all the time. So I'm thinking out loud here. It's not going to be a power steering issue. And so what else can come on and go off and affect the RPMs and give you that surging problem? And we've talked about both of them.
All right.
Okay?
Well, that's great.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Jeremy, I'm going to pause. Okay. Jeremy's in the bathroom.
No, you're good. We're all clear right now.
Okay. I get to tease him because he's the producer, but he's also the assistant. What is that? Give me that again.
Now the assistant program director.
Assistant programming director. And so he answers to one person, well, actually everybody on top of him. But the program director is the one that's in charge of what the content is coming over the radio. And as Jeremy has said before, watching Mark Salem and keeping him in line is the most difficult portion of our job. And I purposely make it that way so they understand what life is really like if you just have somebody that just sticks in one place. Harker's Automotive is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's on my list of best car repair shops. Bob and Ellen handle Harker's Auto. And Harker's is one of those guys that you can challenge in a nice way. He's one of those guys that you could not go in on Monday morning and Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but you go in and you say, I've got this problem and nobody else can find it or fix it. That's called waving the proverbial red cape in front of the bull. It's just some magic words. Now, if the guy's up to his ears in cars like we all are right now, then he may not take the bait or his wife may not take the bait, but at Harker's, trust me when I tell you, this is something that they really do well. So if you have to leave it, or if you can demonstrate the problem, that's important too. But at Harker's, they're really good at chasing down what everybody else may not want to do. They had water coming out of the passenger side floorboard. Somebody bid it at $1,400. They cleaned the drain on the evaporator case, and I think the bill was $85. So that's what they're good at. That's what many of my shops are good at, is let's put a second pair of eyes on your problem, and let's make sure that we're both on the same page. Otherwise, this customer is not supposed to tell us what the other diagnosis was. Just give us the symptoms and see if we're both the same or if we're different, and how are we different, and how we explain our difference to the customer. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. The lines are wide open. You have 1 in 5 chance of getting in. 602-508-0960. Under the hood here with Mark Salem on 960 The Patriot. It's KKNT, and we're here every Saturday between the hours of 10 and noon. 10 and noon right here on KKNT. Thirty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, September 5th, 2020. Let me explain just real quick to make sure that everybody understands that the Best Car Repair Shop started in 1988. I was the first referral guy out there because that's the number one place. That's the number one call I got was, where's your shop? And I didn't want to say my shop, so I sent them to somebody I knew in their geographical area. They have to have insurance. They have to have workman's comp. They have to have a good record. They have to have been in business 5 years. The owners have to be on site. It cannot be owned by a corporation or a silent partner, that kind of stuff. Action Auto is that kind of place. I-17 in Deer Valley, been around since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1983. He runs the store. He owns the store. He's ultimately responsible. And frankly, I've never had any problem with Tom at Action Auto. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians, again, on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. Jesse, how can I help you?
Well, Mark, I've got a 2006 Chevy Silverado with a 4.8. We've determined that that there's a small leak where the water pump attaches to the block.
Okay.
You can see. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and replace the gaskets, but the vehicle only has 86,000 miles. We inherited it from my father-in-law. And I'm just wondering, should I go ahead and replace the water pump while I have it in, have it off, or, with that many miles and that many years? Or?
Well, can you see the weep hole at the bottom of the water pump? There's a little hole there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and
yeah.
There's no coolant coming out of it.
There's nothing, yeah.
Okay.
Everything else is dry around there. It's just that the one side on the driver's side, you can see where it weeps and then trickles down and eventually is on the ground.
Okay, so you know that that's between the water pump and the front cover, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes, I would do the pump. You've been around the world 3 times. You've driven the equator 3 times. That's 75,000 miles. So you're going to already have it off. And so if I were you, I would put it back on. Now, when you take it off, I would look at that particular area to make sure that there's not any corrosion that's caused that area to weaken. It could look like the surface of the moon. It could, and so at that particular point, you're going to use a little extra silicone when you put it together. And you can use silicone on both sides of the gasket, so as you tighten it down, the gasket can move around. And then in your case, I'd pressure test it, after I got it back together, and make sure that we don't have a leak before you put the fan belts and all the fans and all that kind of stuff on there. But are you going to change the coolant?
Oh, yeah.
What color are you going to put in?
Oh, probably, it looks like that GM pink stuff.
Yeah. That's deck's cool, but if I were you, all the colors of coolant mean something. So blue is one, and yellow is one, and orange is one, and all kinds of stuff. I like the amber universal myself. And so you can walk in and you can get, but you're going to have to, when you take the water pump off, you're going to pull the lower hose off anyway. So you're going to drain it out really good. So if I were you, I'd stick a hose. I'd take one of the heater hoses off the manifold, stick a garden hose on there and start it up. And it's going to be puking the water out of the front of the water, you know, the front area and stuff like that. But flush it good. And then just take a 5 gallon bucket and put a gallon of coolant and a gallon of water. Use that to fill it up and you're home free. Okay.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mark.
You betcha. You betcha. Jim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I've got a 2015 Honda Accord, and I have a brake question.
Okay.
90,000 miles. Original brakes are on the front. And I know in the old days you could turn the rotors if they weren't scarred. And I've been told by this place that's going to replace them that now they're too thin to turn, and you automatically replace the rotors when you do a brake job, period. Is that true?
Wow. So has the car been up on the lift?
Yes.
Okay. And they're telling you that the rotors you have are too thin.
Well, yeah, they're not scarred or anything, but the manufacturer, when these were made new, they were not made to be turned at some point. They're almost a throwaway rotor, so when it's time to do your pads and whatnot, you just buy new rotors automatically. They're not turnable.
Okay. I don't know that to be true. I would be rather skeptical if one of my techs came in and told me that. I'd want to see it in the owner's manual. I'd have my parts department call and ask the parts department, say, are these one-time rotors and stuff like that. A lot of times they'll say it's beyond minimum thickness. We have a minimum thickness. And let's pretend the minimum thickness is 600 and you're at 598. Yes. But it's very difficult to find the minimum thickness on a rotor that's got the tire mounted on it. And it's also, and with the caliper on it. So, and you don't have any brake pulsation when you apply the brakes. There's no pedal movement. Okay. And you got 90,000 miles, which tells me that you didn't ride the brakes and tells me you didn't use the brakes because you should have only got half that much time.
So, but I'm not one that roars up to a stoplight and jams on the brakes. I don't do any of that.
And your wife doesn't drive your car. That's the second part of the
answer. You're right.
Oh,
I'm not married.
Okay. Then you just saved both of us. Okay. The idea is I'm very skeptical of that. This would be with no pulsation and nothing else. This is a pad slap. Okay. This is just a pad slap. And they're going to go, oh, the guys are going to go, oh, Mark, you have to put a new finish on it so the pad seat and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's a 50-50 shot. Oh, no, it isn't. It's a 75-25 shot. 75%, it'll be fine. I just don't believe in that. I just don't believe that that's what we should do as an industry. It would have been much more heroic if he would have said, I'll take a finished cut. I know that I got 15 thousandths on that rotor extra, so I'm going to take like 3 thousandths off each side. And I know I'm still going to keep you above the minimum. That would make you feel better. And there's going to be some guys that say, Mark, the pads aren't going to seat if you don't have a nice rotor to seat them. I don't agree with that at all either.
Well, one quick thing, and I'm with 20 seconds. I had the back ones done about 6 months ago, and I won't tell the shop's name, and they turned them for me when they shouldn't have, but they did, and it had a humming noise for about 3 months, and then it went away, and everything is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think
The humming noise could very well be the pad is vibrating as we, and the rear brakes are different because we got the calipers that are adjustable with the parking brake. And the calipers adjust by the use of the parking brake. Now raise your right hand and tell me you use the parking brake every time you park it.
I do.
Oh,
I raise my left hand, but I do.
Okay.
Remember, I'm not married.
Okay. That means you can fib to the guy on the radio. Okay, I got it. When every time you apply the parking brake, you're actually, in 90% of the time, you're adjusting the rear brake calipers. It may have taken a while for that to happen. But anyway, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks, Jim. All righty.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. 602-508. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got open lines available. Jeremy will say, hi, would you like to talk to Mark? And you can say, Mark says you're only second in quality than Gil, his normal producer. And if he hangs up on you, just call back. We'll be back. Oh boy. Jeremy made that, gosh, I don't know how long ago, 2011, so it's been 9 years that we've played that. And it is very, very humorous and unfortunately probably really, really true. And Jeremy's running the board. See, folks, Gil is normally running the board. So I texted him this morning or called him this morning and I said, hey, feed me programming when you get in. That way I can adjust everything on the studio that I'm remote in. Well, nothing happened, and so Gil sends me an email or a text, and he says, hey, I'm in California this weekend, if you remember. Well, I do remember that he told me. So then I send him a text back, and I say, tell your wife I'm terribly sorry for interrupting your Saturday morning vacation. Now, you know that there's a couple of different ways this can turn out, and I'm not going to tell you what he said or what he didn't say or what I said or didn't say. We both just were smart enough to leave it alone. Just leave it alone. So it's just one of those things that happened. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got 1 in 5 chance. I have a question that I would like someone to answer, and perhaps someone of the medical arena, you know, a doctor who's got gray hair and been around the world. I spent a significant amount of time in a giant piece of equipment trimming a tree for my wife this weekend, and evidently I hurt my back. So this morning when I went to get her the chainsaw, I fell down, and it was one of those situations where it's help, I can't get, you know, I've fallen, I can't get up. And so I was looking for my phone. I didn't have my phone. My back was killing me. This first time I've ever had this happen in my life. So I was able to get to her. She went to Walmart and got me a back belt. And I have not been drinking, but I intend to start right after the show. But I want to know the difference between Tylenol and, what's the other one, Jeremy?
Ibuprofen?
Thank you. Ibuprofen and Tylenol. I'd like to know the difference between the two. And I'd like to, the second question is how many can I take a day and not die? So if you're a doctor, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And then the next question I'm going to ask you if you decide to take my ibuprofen and Tylenol question is, what do you take? What does your wife take? And that's kind of the home run for me. If both of you take the same thing, then, yeah, that means a lot to me. But if it's a division in your family, then it's like a division in mine. So that's really how it is. Autodynamics is in Sun City. I've known Chuck, the owner of Autodynamics, since 1968. I never worked for Chuck, but he was in the gas station arena, and him and my boss, Ken, were really good friends. And so Chuck came in and out of our station at times. So I've known him that long. He owns and operates Autodynamics. And Autodynamics has been up in Sun City since 1982. And it's been family-owned and operated since 1982. So if you're in the Sun City area, the only shop I can recommend for you is Automotive Dynamics. It's on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. So the northwest corner of Grand Avenue and 99th Avenue. That's how it works. When it comes to car dealing with your shop, I'd like you to think about this. When you come in, don't tell us what your, well, ladies, don't tell us what your husband said. Tell us what the symptoms are. And if you can actually make the symptoms happen, you could ask them, if I promise not to have the technician for hours and hours, if I promise that I can be back in 15 minutes, if you have a technician come with me, I can demonstrate the noise, the clunk, the vibration. What's unacceptable is to take our technician for an hour because you can't get it to happen. So that's really the question is, if you have a symptom, can you duplicate the symptom in front of a technician? Now keep in mind too that as a shop owner, we don't have, if you have 10 technicians, you don't have all 10 of them that are capable of going on a test drive. First of all, you've got one with bad breath. You've got one that looks like a biker. You've got one that uses the same uniform 2 days in a row. Then you got Purdy Boy, who smells good and his fingernails are clean, and but he's not here today. So you have all these dynamics, and the shop typically is going to try to send someone with you that's clean, that can communicate well, and it's not somebody who's going to scare you while you're in your car. And I say that all with a big smile on my face, and you can understand I'm kind of making fun of our industry, but that's kind of how it works. So from
caller
the
Eric.
Lady's point of view, that's really what it's all about. Eric, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. And the guy with the bad breath and the Harley probably knows how to fix all the cars. He's the guy that you want in the car anyway, right?
You're exactly right. I know I'm going to get in trouble for that. I just know because I was actually looking at forget the bad breath one, but I was actually thinking about the technicians that I have. And you're absolutely right. The technician that looks like a biker and drives a bike, he can fix anything. So, yeah, but I'm not likely to send him if your grandmother comes in. I'm going to probably send Eddie or I'm going to send my son, but not him. All righty, what's up?
So just bought a car with my girlfriend. She had a 2004 Escalade EXT that she loved for many years, and we found an owner that, you know, 75-year-old man who, you know, had a little notebook, changed the oil every 3,000 miles with, you know, synthetic, and did everything on the vehicle. It's got 109,000 miles. Never had the radiator change, fluid change. He just added to it. You know, other than that, you know, he had a grease pit and a lift in his car, you know, waxed it. The thing is, it looks like it came off the showroom floor. But my girlfriend's one of the types that, you know, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, I own 10 cars and 10 motorcycles, and I fix stuff all the time. And so I'm going through this vehicle and trying to make it, you know, taking it to Idaho soon and, you know, towing with it. It was towed a little bit. He did change the transmission fluid at 50,000 miles. I'm just trying to go through the whole vehicle. So first thing that I, you know, did was, okay, the radiator hoses are probably bad. It's, you know, 17 years
okay,
old.
Okay, hold on just a minute, Eric. Hold on. Everything is due on that car at 100,000. There isn't anything on that car. So let's just count out what you said. He's done a tranny service. That's fine. He's not done cooling system. That's
well,
not.
He didn't do a filters change, but he changed the fluid. I think at 100, you got to change the tranny filter. So okay. The things that I bought, for the radiator hoses, you know, the air rights and shot. I did a Bilstein, you know, took out the computer system, put in a Moog springs with, you know, Bilsteins all the way around, just deleted that whole crazy air ride thing that thing has. But, you know, all of the fluid changes, you know, go through the brake.
What's the question, though?
The water pump, the original water pump on this, so this is a 6-liter high-output LS motor. The thing, and I'm not used to this, and apparently every mechanic's telling me they run hot. You know, they run at 208 to 210 operating temperature, something to do with gas mileage.
Okay. Eric, we got to come to an end here, buddy. I've got.
The question is, the original water pump is a different design, but it has a separate thermostat. They make 100, you know, in Phoenix, they say to put in, you know, you can put in a lower thermostat. The question is do you just replace the water pump, go to the newer design style, or do you leave it there? It hasn't weeped it on the weep hole, things
okay.
like that. It looks
okay.
Fine,
okay.
Should I replace it?
Okay.
Or should I do a thermostat?
Okay. If it's my turn, you're all wrong. Okay. 208 is an overheat and it runs hot? That's a wives' tale. So you can do whatever you want. You can put whatever you want. Usually the water pump, revision 1, version 1, version 2, version 3, and usually they're backward compatible. Put whatever water pump you want on it. But whatever you're going to do, if you want to, and you want to go by all the other people on the internet, then yes, put a 195 thermostat in it. And then that way the computer won't know what to do. It'll think the motor's cold, so it'll turn the faucet up and then flush out the injectors with gas. Then we'll fill the catalytic converter up and we'll seize it all up. The idea is that car is designed to run at 220. I don't care what anybody else says. It's designed to run at 220. Its normal range is from 240 to 210. So here's why. We have to get the oil up past 212 to boil the water out of it. So 212 and 208 is going to make the oil, the water stay in the oil. Then we're going to turn to sludge, and then we're going to take the drain plug out, and it's going to come out like soft ice cream. So all of this stuff means nothing. You ask my opinion, you can put whatever water pump you want. You can put whatever coolant you want. But the idea of taking and putting a 195 thermostat in something that calls for something different is a step back, a step behind, is useless and really not a wise move. So I don't care what everybody else tells you. That thing should run 220, give or take 10. All my equipment, and I have more cars than you. All my equipment runs at 220. The whole idea is that at 180 thermostat, we had water. And the water never boiled because simple science in high school says water boils at 212. That's why we had sludge. That's why we had motors fail at 80 and 100,000 miles. Is when you pulled the oil pan off, all it had was black ice cream in it. And it would plug up the pickup assembly on the water, on the oil pump, and cause the engine to seize up. So all of a sudden, in 1996, they thought, well, let's put a hotter thermostat in it, and let's see if we can get it to run north of 212. Voila! We take engines apart with 200,000 miles. There's not an iota. Not there isn't a half a teaspoon worth of black sludge in those things. The inside of the oil pan, the inside of the engine, is amber through and through. So that's my thought. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Jeremy's the big dog on the, he'll answer your phone. And we'll stick with year, make, and model and particular symptoms that we want to talk about or a particular dispute between a husband and a wife. I'm especially good with those. And there's sometimes that I'm not especially good, and there's sometimes I is, and some I am, and sometimes I'm not well behaved, and sometimes I am. But we just need to get to the end sometime, and that's kind of why we narrow it down. 602-508-0960. My email address, if you want to complain about me, is easy. Mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem.com. And I take criticism well. I may or may not answer you, but I know my wife won't. So, nevertheless, 602-508-0960. The thing I object to is fixing the car based on what the internet says and what all my buddies say. That's something I deal with every day, and really it's like asking somebody about your dog that's not a veterinarian. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I think I've been able to shake the doldrums from my head. And I want to talk about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's a really good guy. I-17 in Bell Road, northeast corner. Been around since 1987. Works on gas and diesel. He does everything imaginable, but he's smart enough to tell you when he's not the best guy for the job you have. So if you're looking for a good repair shop, domestic import, gas and diesel, been around a long time, then Kurt's Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, is a place that perhaps you should go. Who's call next?
We got Tom from Phoenix.
Oh, Tom, how can I help you?
How you doing today, Mark?
Good.
So I was listening to a caller, and I was thinking to myself as I was driving down the road listening to a conversation about water pumps, and where I have found that some might come from is by reading something on the internet or going to YouTube University, and I wanted to get your feedback on that.
I recognize your voice, and you're just going to throw me under the bus.
I'm not.
Okay. I want to ask you a question. The guy's taken really expert care of his car. One of the things was is he changed – I said it's due for everything, and that was glossed over. But I said – the transmission, and he goes, well, he changed the fluid, but he didn't do the filter. Would you like to comment on that?
He changed the fluid, but not the filter.
At 100K.
Okay, well, I've got two schools of thought on that. One is, has it been serviced more than once?
No.
More than twice?
No. Hey, Tom, you got the question. It's real simple. It's got 100K, and the only thing that's been done is the previous owner changed the fluid. Don't make me mad at you, too.
Okay, so we need to change the filter.
Well, here's my point. My point is we pull the pan on those so that we can look to see if there's any broken snap rings. We can look and see if the clutch material is really burnt. We look inside, and that tells us what the last 100,000 miles has been. In addition to that, it's been around the world 4 times, and he didn't change the filter. I don't understand that. Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay. Second of all, and I'm going to ask you, it runs hot. You want to comment that they run hot at 210 or 215?
No, not in this climate at all. Okay. As you mentioned before, this the ECM has to take and read what the engine, what the water temperature is, to control the fuel, to do fuel control, and to do timing control and so on. I just had this conversation with somebody one day recently about running hot or not running hot, and the distance that they drive, talking about the oil and the water and the oil. That's imperative. These things get the water out of the oil, especially in short drives. 5, 6, 7 miles to work each way in the wintertime, got to get hot.
You're right. And if they don't ever get it hot and take that horse out and exercise it and run it for a while, then the only other option is to speed up the oil change interval. Yes?
On the water pump issue, fill me in again on that one.
Well, he wanted to replace the water pump, and they make a new extra special or a new improved water pump, and wanted to know if that's okay to use, or he was going to use that, or he wanted a comment.
Well, there are several LS conversions for water pumps, and that's a whole other line of dialogue on that one.
Okay. Well, that I don't know why we even got to this dialogue about changing the water pump and upgrading or anything like that at all. I don't, you know, that this big square box was filled with a lot of stuff. And one of the things was I couldn't remember all the things I wanted to discuss because we changed subjects so quickly. But thank you for your attempt to to placate me, but I'm not gonna. I know you're messing with me, and I know that that's the way you are. But I let me ask you a couple of questions. I said at 100th day everything is due. Would you agree with that? It's a simple yes or no.
No. Okay. No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Tell me what's not due.
Depending on the transmission fluid, number one.
Okay. So you don't think that we should change the transmission fluid and filter at 100,000?
If it's never been used, like the VTC transmissions, the CVT, I'm sorry, some of those ones you don't ever change the fluid in them.
Well, I understand that, but they don't even represent 1% of the cars in the market. Tom, I got to look at it from a global point of view. So you can't pull exceptions out of there that apply to 1% of the cars out there. I've been looking at owner manual, and so have you, all of our lives. And there isn't one of them out there that doesn't call for spark plugs and belts and hoses and fluid changes and stuff like that. I mean, it's been around the world 4 times on the equator, and it's kind of foolish to think that these cars are going to have all these lifetime fluids in them. I'm going to grant you that some of them have lifetime fluids, but do you ever change the lifetime fluids on either your cars or customers' cars?
We have.
Okay. All right.
We have.
And so have I.
And change them sooner, like on
Eric
on
is back and promises to
we
be quick.
We have that luxury.
Ugh, no on, way, Jeremy.
But the other thing I think that is important is that the severe and non-severe weather conditions, like out here on the road I'm driving down right now, headed out to Maricopa, it's miserable. It's 195 degrees. The dust is blowing so hard that I can barely keep the truck on the road. But you got to change the air filter sooner than every 50,000 miles. You know what I mean?
No, but that's certainly the air filter is an exception because that's going to be checked during every oil change, and the oil change is going to stretch between 3,000 and 10,000. So
right.
In that 100,000 miles, there's no way you're going to end up with a dirty oil filter or an air filter unless, of course, you're doing your own oil changes and you don't ever check it. So,
right. Well, I'm being persistent in that, saying that where this guy's at on the equator is if he's going through weather conditions that are 80 degrees and no dust and no rain and just in the Sahara Desert where it's hot, sand blowing and those types of things. So with these severe weather conditions, the owner's manual has to be, you have to make adjustments for that, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, you know, they no longer have that in some of the new owner's manual in the last 5 years. They don't have severe service anymore. And it's because we don't oxidize the transmission fluid or turn it to a tar until it gets 320 degrees, and by that time the transmission's toast anyway. So the idea of severe, then certainly we have Arizona on one end of the spectrum, and then we have those North Dakota and Minnesota places on the other end of the spectrum. But when we all of a sudden just eliminate the severe particular part of the owner's manual, all of a sudden then they're saying the fluids are top-notch, the cars are top-notch, and we don't need to do anything associated with those two. We back in the 70s and the 80s, we did fluids all the time, but they're nothing like the fluids of today. But anyway, I got to run, so I'm going to make sure that I'm going to disparage your name and your shop's name in the very near future. So I just wanted to
come on, be nice. I'll post your phone number at home. Everywhere I'll send
all
it
right.
on card.
Okay, goes both ways. Thanks a lot. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Next up we have Jay.
Jay, good morning.
How you doing, Mark?
I'm better, thank you.
Hey, I got a 019 Silverado half ton.
Okay.
Got the 4.3 V6 EagleTech engine in it.
Okay.
And I'm running about 18,000 miles, and for the last 1,000 miles, I've been getting an odor around the truck. When I stop to do something, I'll leave it on, and then for my job, and then it smells like that old fashioned carburetor running rich sound or
okay.
smell. And a mechanic at the dealer told me that's the catalytic converter burning off. He called it something. He said he'll do that between about 13 and about 18,000-19,000 miles.
Okay.
I've never heard of that before.
Neither have I. But let me clarify something. You're in the construction business, and instead of turning it off as you go from place to place to supervise your employees or whatever you're doing, you're letting
right.
it idle. And the question is how long are you letting it idle?
Usually anywhere from 1 to 4 minutes.
Okay. And before you get that, have you traveled the highway? Are you going from Sun City to the north to Maricopa to the south?
No, I'm staying within a 5 mile radius of the warehouse I work out of.
Okay. Is it a rotten egg smell?
Yeah, I'd say it's a combination of that, kind of a fluid smell. Like I said, that old fashioned carburetor. Running rich smell.
Okay.
And
The old carburetor rich smell was CO, and that's the rich coming out of the tailpipe. So we have not only partially burnt molecules of fuel, but then we have the entire molecule of fuel. Now, HC is the incomplete combustion, and CO is just raw fuel. So,
okay.
But your catalytic converter, I don't know that I'd be real concerned about this right now. I don't agree that the catalytic converter is in the environment that you've been told. I don't believe that.
Okay.
I was fishing for, I pull up to a site and I could be there 10 or 15 minutes. Now, during that period of time, it's idling and the catalytic converter could certainly cool off. If the catalytic converter is no longer acting like a blowtorch and any raw fuel that comes through the catalytic converter is immediately consumed, what comes out of the tailpipe on newer model cars is stuff that you could breathe. So
right.
in your particular case, I was searching for that. You're parked there for a long period of time, keeping the motor running, and then I would expect some minor smell associated with when you got there. And it could very
yeah.
well be that it could be very well CO, and as a result of that, it's the catalytic converter's cooled off. You got it running. It's cooled off. And now we're sending some extra fuel out the tailpipe, and you describe it appropriately. So
okay.
Is this
a problem I need to have to go back to the dealer and have a warranty work looked at on it?
Well, no, because right now you don't have a check engine light. Right now you don't have any codes. Right now you don't have the rotten egg smell. And your emissions warranty on that is going to cover you for three times what you've got in it right now. Here's what I'd like you to do. Let's experiment. Shut the thing off when you get there. And then start it back up and see if we have an unusual smell.
I see.
And let's do that. Because really and truly, you're not doing your truck any favor. I understand why you're letting it run. It's because it's hot out there. I understand because you want the air to run. I understand all that, and I do the same thing. But all I'm saying is let's try something different and see if we get any kind of smell. And if we wipe away the smell and you're not puffing black smoke out of that tailpipe and the catalytic converter is working perfectly, then there's no harm, no foul.
Okay. Yeah, there's no color at all coming out of the tailpipe, either black or white, either one.
Even when you tromp it?
I've never seen any smoke coming out of the tailpipe.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer. That's the answer I'm looking for. I don't want any smoke out of there. The white is really bad because that's coolant or transmission fluid. But no, I don't want any smoke out of there. You're just using the truck in the environment that it wasn't really designed for. How many of your neighbors and friends and family and the guys you know do what you do? Go from place to place. And it'll probably cool off. When you drive away now, we got to get it warm enough to where that flame. Think of the catalytic converter has rocks in it that are red hot. Everything that comes through the cat is consumed. Well, I think your rocks are cooling off. And I think it takes a while for it to get them warmed up again.
Yeah.
All righty.
Yeah. Outside of that, it's running perfect.
Yeah. And actually, you'll have no problem. You said it was a 2019?
Right.
Okay. Today, the cars are going 300,000 and 400,000 miles. I was looking the other day, and I can't tell you how many cars I've got in the 200,000 and 300,000 and 400,000 mile range. Just for everybody else, the engine's going to fail when you overheat it or run it low on oil or you abuse the car. If you get close to the maintenance records inside your manual, and if you don't overheat it, don't run it low on oil, and you don't let your 16-year-old kid take it out every Friday night, then more than likely you're going to get 200,000 or 300,000 miles out of it. And that's something we never saw before. Okey-doke.
Okay, Mark. Thank you.
You betcha. When it comes to car repair, the most important thing is to check the shop out before you use them. And you can do that on the internet by just typing the name of the shop. The longer the shop's been in business under the same management, then the more likely it is that they'll be good, because there's a whole lot of them that come and go within a year or two period of time. So those dinosaurs out there that are north of 10 years in the business and perhaps even at the same location are your good bet. 602-508-0960. The lines are open. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, when it comes to diesel stuff, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a A-plus rated shop as far as I'm concerned. He knows diesels. He's a diehard diesel service, repair, parts, performance, domestic diesels, import diesels, foreign diesels, no matter what it is. Nate at Strictly Diesel is really good at what he does. Now, you may have a gasoline car that needs an oil change. He'll do that for you as well. But probably 80% of the cars and trucks in his shops are diesels. And, of course, that's a completely new way to make a car go down the road. And it doesn't necessarily mean if you're really good on gas, you're going to be really good on diesel. They are quite different. That's the same as saying if you're really a good horse doctor, then you're going to be a good giraffe doctor. That isn't going to fly. So diesel, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a great guy. Ernie, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'm just curious. I got a 2018 Ford Edge. It's got a smaller motor in it. And you're talking about condensation buildup, I assume, builds up in the oil. This is all new to me. Okay, I didn't know it did that. But, okay, you're talking about it. Since I only drive like maybe 10 miles a day, how far do I have to drive it? What maybe once a week? Give me an explanation on this, how far I need to drive once a week to get all that liquid out of the oil.
Okay, all right. How many miles are on your 19 right now, or your 18?
12,000.
Okay, so it's 2 years, 12,000, so about 6,000 miles a year. Would that be close?
Yeah.
All right. Do you have a temperature gauge on your car?
I do.
Okay. I want the temperature gauge to read the 5/8 mark every once in a while.
Okay? It reads about the halfway mark.
All right. How often are you changing your oil?
I just bought it. It's still under warranty, so I got to change it every 5,000 miles or 6 months.
Okay. Do you live alone?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's, their wife works clear across town or something. What happens is every time the engine warms up and cools off, there's condensation. So we're going to cool off whatever's in the engine, and as it's like boiling water. When you shut off the boiling water, then the lid of the pot gets wet and with condensation. So we need to boil that, and we need to go 212. So we turn the water to a vapor at 212. Then the PCV valve, the positive crankcase ventilator, it sucks the fumes out of the motor, sends them out the tailpipe. If you're going to change your oil every 5,000 miles, I was scared you were going to tell me you have synthetic and that you're going to go 10 or 12,000 miles. I'm going to have to go to plan B, but if you're going to change oil every 5,000 miles, I'm not concerned about that. My wife has an Edge. She's got 100,000 miles on it. She drives from Payson down to Phoenix and back quite a bit, just like I do. And neither one of us are worried about moisture because we're obviously taking it into the normal operating temperature. There's going to be some times that you're going to say to yourself, I'm going to take the long way to the grandkids' house. I'm going to get on the freeway to go to my daughter's house, or I'm going to go to this party, or I'm going to go to that place. Then, and also another thing to do is don't put it in a drive. Bring it down a notch in the shifter and bring the RPMs up. That'll heat the engine up a little bit too. So it's no big deal for you to drive to the grocery store that's 5 miles away if you pull it out of drive and you pull it down into the next gear, which will bring the RPMs up to pretty close to 2 and maybe even above that. Does that all make sense?
Thank you very much. Very helpful.
You bet, Ernie. Thank you very much. Dale, you're up next.
Hello, Mark. Hope you're having a great day. I got a question about temperature, like everybody else today. Okay, so I'm building a small block 350 Chevy, and I have two questions.
Okay.
It had a 195 thermostat in it, but from today's conversation, that is probably not the best. Is that correct?
Is this a fuel-injected motor or a carbureted motor?
Carbureted motor.
Okay. And is that 350 with the 195 thermostat? See, there is nothing higher than 195. When we raise it to 195, we're going to force it into 220.
Okay.
We're going to open the thermostat at 195, but it's going to continue to climb from there. If we take it down to 180, then what we've got is this range between when it opens and when you get to operating temperature is much wider, where at 195 to 220, it's much narrower.
Great. Okay, that's a very good explanation. Thank you.
Okay.
My second question is, where would you put the thermostat probe that runs the gauge?
It's probably going to be in the intake manifold right by the thermostat housing.
Okay, there is one there, but this came out of a 78 Suburban.
Okay.
And I believe that there's a port on the driver's side on the block just below the head.
Just below the head?
Well, kind of, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want the truest temperature.
Okay, I'm thinking you're going to go near the thermostat. Let's assume that this, we're going to build, whatever you're building is going to be comparable to the 78 Suburban it came out of. Then
no,
the
not temp- going to be at all comparable.
Okay, you're
putting this in a 280Z, 75 280Z Datsun.
Okay, well, I'd put the temperature, there may be a temperature sensor on the head, and there may be a temperature sensor up on the intake manifold. I think the one on the head, as long as you look through it and you see that it's in the cooling system, it's really not going to make a difference whether you're pulling it off the top of the manifold and the head. Although somebody's going to call me on that, and there may be a difference of 5 degrees, but not anything significant. if you're going to put this in a 280Z and you're going to make the motor run a little bit better, you're probably going to have to use some electric cooling fans to keep that thing cool, or a shroud.
Absolutely.
Okay, a shroud's better.
Both. And then, both shroud and electric cooling fans.
Okay, and you're going to have the temperature or the fans push or pull?
I was expecting to pull.
Okay, so you're going to mount them on the radiator side, the engine side of the radiator.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now there's a good chance you'll have a tough time keeping that V8 cool with two electric fans. If you wanted to, it'd be far better off to put a shroud on the radiator and put a clutch fan on there. I've walked that path before. I put Quinn cooling fans on the 74 Chevy pickup, and I could never get that thing to run south of 240, which really didn't bother me that much. But
okay.
just be careful about that. Shrouds are important, and it doesn't really make any difference if you push or pull, other than the fact that the fans, when you're pulling, the fans get hotter because all the air you pull through the radiator obviously is going over the fans. And, Jeremy, I am so sorry I messed up. Stay right there, Dale. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 35 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and hopefully Dale's still there. Dale, you there?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm still here.
Let me just talk to you for a minute, okay?
Okay.
I would put 2-inch exhaust on that, and I would put the mufflers on that give you the noise, but the less restriction. You probably want a little thump to it. I would have somebody make me a shroud and use a clutch fan, and I'd put the motor in first, and I'd put the radiator in second, then have the clutch, or then see how far the clutch fan. I would use an HEI ignition, which needs a 12 volt. That's all it needs. So I'd use
that.
Okay. I would use a spread bore, which is the 4-barrel carburetor with the 2 air fuel mixture screws in the front. And Holly makes a nice one.
Oh, I've got an Elbrock.
Okay, well, and the Edelbrock has the two screws in the front of it, the air fuel mixture screws right in the front on the base.
I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I only took it out of the box once to look to make sure everything was there, and I haven't seen it since.
Okay, I'm pretty sure your Edelbrock has the two screws. When you take it off, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I'd use a nice air filter on it, but a low profile to get it underneath the hood. I would use probably an electric fuel pump, but you can use a mechanical. That's no problem. The Edelbrock is going to come with an electric choke, and you're going to probably run one of those wires to the alternator and just to light it up so it doesn't stay shut. And you're probably going to have power brakes on it, so you'll have plenty of vacuum off the back of the manifold for that. So those are some of the mistakes that most of them make. They'll put a dual Mallory dual point in there, or they'll use some kind of off-brand electronic, but that 350 will love an HEI, plus it's 60K in voltage to the spark plugs. Open up the exhaust, not too noisy, not too quiet. Cooling system and fuel delivery, more than likely, if you can get the plugs to be tan or just on the tan to dark side, then your fuel delivery is perfect. So that's how I would handle it, okay?
You gave me so much information, I couldn't write it all down.
Oh, no, I'll tell you what. Mark, I'll help you. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Marksalem.com. If you'll give me your phone number, I'll call you from my blocked cell, and we'll have a short 10-minute conversation, and you get your questions, and I'll get your answers, okay?
Sounds wonderful. Thank you. I listen to you every weekend.
Well, thank you for trusting me. Thank you. When it comes to cars, I maybe spoke out of both sides of my mouth because I tell you I don't want the history and stuff. When we open up the show, I just kind of give you the short version of my resume so that you know that I've been in the business for 40 years and you know that I'm a master tech. And so you know that I at least have some semblance of experience and knowledge that I can share with you. There's times that I don't agree with the owner's manual, and there's times that I do agree, but the difference is 95% of the time I agree with the owner's manual, and then 5% I don't. I also understand that people drive different ways, and of course, we can kind of adapt the vehicle and the engine to the ways on some of the older cars, but not on the newer model cars. There's also some flexibility with respect. We've had tire questions about the different tire sizes. We've had questions before about the exhaust, what brand catalytic converter I should use, stuff like that. We've had questions. All I can do is tell you that I've walked that path with customers before. It's not uncommon for someone to come in and have, you know, multiple electric fans, but they can't keep the needle off the red. The very first thing we want to do is make sure that the sensors tell on the gauge the truth and that they're matched and that they can talk to one another. Because if the sensor sends one signal but the gauge interprets it as something else, then really you're fighting an overheat that really isn't there. So then what we do at that point is we teach you how to check the temperature of the engine. And basically you go to the thermostat housing and just gun that with a temperature gun that you can buy at Harbor Freight for real cheap. So if the gauge says it's running 260, but in reality the upper hose gun's at 220, 230, then we got a problem with the gauge and the sending unit. So that's kind of what it's all about. Because I grew up from the 60s, and then we went into the 70s, and in the mid-70s we went to electronic ignition, and then in the 80s we went to electronic carburetors, which was a huge mess. And then in the 90s we popped into fuel injection, where we've been, but there's been three or four levels of fuel injections. You had throttle bodies, and then you had port fuel, and then you have sequential port fuel. So you have all of these stopping points, and each one of the changes, most all the time, is a benefit. Each one of the changes is a step forward, but I could name quite a few that were a step back, but they ultimately, we reverse direction. 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. Okay, 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're going to talk about Thompson's real quick, and then we got some callers. Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that I put my name next to. Brian and Thelma are really good people. They know what they're doing. They're honest and they're dependable. Plus, they come from families that used to pump gas and had bays in their gas stations from the 1960s and 70s. So these two young people, married couple, come from two families that have years and years of experience, even far more than I have. So they know the difference between right and wrong. Thompson's Auto Repair, just east of Stapley on Main Street. Good guy to go. Eddie or Don, you're up first. Don, how can I help you?
So what did you do to your back?
I don't have any idea. I just bent over to pick up a hedge trimmer on the ground, and I fell down, and then I cried, and everybody made fun of me.
And where was Renee at this time?
She was laughing at me. She was part of the group that was laughing at me.
Oh, shame on her.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was thinking about putting disc brakes on the back of my S10.
Okay.
What happens to the emergency brake?
Most of the time, the rear discs, rear road or calipers have a lever on them, and you're going to hook your power or your parking brake to that lever. So, and when you pull that lever, there's a cam on the arm that's going to push the pads together. And so if you pull it off right, then you're just going to have to adapt the cables to both calipers. Otherwise,
pull the spring back and hook it into where, like you would with the emergency brake on regular ground brakes.
That's right. And the other possibility is you just make sure park works really good in your transmission.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Don.
Okay.
God, take care.
Thank you, Don. Don and I have known one another for 20 years. He's a tow truck driver. He's probably the best, but one of the best ones I've ever seen. He can pick a car out of the canal and not cause any more damage. That's how good this guy is. Eddie, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, I wanted to discuss this fill for life, whether it be a transmission or a differential or a transfer case.
Yeah.
Who determines life?
The oil manufacturer, and the car manufacturer gives them what they believe to be the square box that the overwhelming majority of their cars are going to be in operated in, and then them with the oil manufacturers will then come to a common ground. Let me answer.
I'm meaning in mines.
Okay. Let me tell you that first about oil. We have a conventional oil that turns to a tar at 280 degrees. Now the semi-synthetic moves it to 320, and the semi-synthetics, it doesn't turn to a tar till 500. Never mind your motor is junk after 250. Okay.
Well, I'm not talking about engine oil for life. I'm talking about the other fluid.
I'm talking to
research.
They're all the same. Each one of them is a step up from the last year and the year before. Each one of them has a different range of temperature and each one of them has an oxidation point that's different, which is where they turn to a, where they burn up. Coolant, power steering, engine, and transmission, and differentials. They've all improved dramatically the fluid, which would then improve and add to the change interval. So we can't stick with 30,000 miles that we used to do on a, in a 1970s car. Today we're much further than that in the last maybe 8 years. Does that answer?
Yeah, what I'm saying is though there's always a provision to add fluid to them. So why not exchange or change the fluid to extend the quote life of that component?
Yeah. But I'm not quite sure I do.
You know who you're talking to, right?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay, boss.
Oh. Okay. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I saw Eddie there, and I said to myself, all right, let me ask you a question, Mr. Smarty Pants. How many of all the cars you service on an annual basis at our shop, how many do you find that are quart low on transmission fluid?
I wouldn't say a quart. I mean, I see transfer cases all the time. I have quart low just because oxidization.
Are they above? Are they above the ad mark? A half a quart low.
No, no,
are we half a quart off full, or are we above the? Are we above or below the ad?
No, we're half a quart on low. So it's not like we're overfilled where the transmission is bleeding into the transfer case. No, we're low.
All right. Well, I think you'll agree with me that we can move those intervals up, but you'll also agree with me that my philosophy on transmission services is that we do the filter first, however that interval is, so that we can look for bad things inside the transmission, and then we do a flush next. What's that?
Then you alternate. Do a service, a flush, a service, a flush.
That's what I believe is in our customer's best interest.
Right.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to understand is, you know, like I already said, that the life of this whatever this component is. I mean, take every human being and their body has a fill for life, whether it's your lungs, your blood, or whatever. So what I'm suggesting is that if you exercise, then you're somewhat kind of exchanging your fill for life.
Okay.
You know, you're not sedentary. You're not just sitting on the couch for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Obviously, we know that exercise equals, for the most part, longevity.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. Can't we, instead of just fill for life, we just don't do it until it just, the transmission, the transfer case just fails. Can't we just do a little more preventative service on it, or to maybe extend that so-called life?
Well, if we change in today's transmissions, what's the average life of today's automatic transmission? Would you agree that it's probably 120 and north of that?
On a shifting transmission, not on a CVT.
Now, come on, stick with me here. A shifting transmission,
okay.
A newer one. Okay. Well, is the life 120 to 150?
Oh, easily.
Okay. So I'm not quite sure why we'd spend a whole lot of money trying to improve the life when really the science has to do with how they abuse it or how they drive it. So we got Grandma Moses driving her car, but then she's got a grandson that's 16 years old that's out on Friday night on Central burning the tires. So it's, and then everybody drives different temperatures, everybody drives different intervals, everybody drives different miles. So it's really hard, that target is moving. And I'm going to tell you right now, come Monday morning, you're going to be on oil changes for the rest of your life. Folks, Eddie's been working for me how many years?
31
years. And I hired him when he was a kid. And I'll tell you the quick story. Eddie walks in, and he sits down. And I ask him if he's ever done this. And he goes, yes. And after I ask him about the sixth, seventh, eighth question, Have you ever worked on a quadrajet? Have you ever changed a C6 or a C transmission? And he's yawning and I'm boring him. So I'm thinking, oh, this kid can't have that many years of experience. Well, he did. He's probably in the top two technicians that I've ever hired in all my life. And he's, like I said, he's been with me north of 30 years, and he can work on anything, but he's a real Ford guy. So that's the rub between him and I. He's a Ford guy. I'm a GM guy. And so that's why now, goodbye, Eddie. We're going to say goodbye
all right.
To Eddie Caruso. And Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir, Mark. Glad to speak to you. I'm a fourth-time caller, and it goes back several years.
Okay.
So anyway, my current problem is a 2018 Ford Focus. Noticed a rumble. We thought it was in the right front area. The initial friend told me, he said, I think it's a wheel bearing. We take it to one dealer where we bought the car. Their service department said wheel bearing. So we went to the one in our hometown, though, thinking that would be the way to get it done more, you know, easy. And they said, no, it's a bad tire and it's out of alignment. So we had it aligned, but the noise is still there. And personally, I think it is a wheel bearing.
Okay.
So I don't know what to do or
all right.
How to isolate the problem.
I got this. You know how what a clover leaf looks like on an interchange,
yep.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
Most all of them are a sweeping right turn.
I know what you're going to say.
You're going to be able to make the noise go away on a sweeping left turn or sweeping right turn, and if that's the case, it's a wheel
right.
bearing.
Okay.
That's all there is to it.
All right. By the way, I was going to say, in the years past, you've helped me on a Beretta, a Corvette, and restoring a Triumph motorcycle. So, it's been a good experience.
Here's my dad says, if BS was snow, Mark would be a walking blizzard. Okay? Now, think about that. If BS was snow, my son would be a walking blizzard. Let me just explain to everybody else. There's two wheel bearings. Even though they're associated as one, there's two wheel bearings on the front end of your car. They just come
right.
as a package. Well, when you turn right, you're actually loading one, the inside
right.
of one and the outside of the other. So as you go through those sweeping left turns and sweeping right turns, if the noise changes, it's going to be a wheel bearing problem. The question is which side is that? Is it the inner on the right or the outer on the left? But you said it's on the right front. And so I say, yep, let's go there. What part of town do you live in?
Well, we are in a small town north of St. Louis.
Oh,
unfortunately, we bought the car 60 miles out from us,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't want to take it back there because they told us it'd be a three-hour repair. So now this other dealer tells us, no, it's alignment, and then the tire is worn, causing the noise.
Okay, and here's my answer to that. Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, let's take the fronts off and put them on the backs. Let's put the backs on the front. Forget the alignment. Did we change the noise any? Did we change the vibration any? I got to run, but I just want to tell everybody, I did radio in KMOX in St. Louis, and it had a huge footprint. KMOX had a footprint from Denver, Colorado to Washington, D.C., from the lowest part of Texas to the Canadian border. So there was calls from all over the place. I've never been in a community like St. Louis where the people were so nice. No matter what I did and how bad my behavior was, they put up with me, and they were so nice, and they rarely beat up on the shop that they had known the father and then the son, and now the grandson's running it. So I just want to say that the St. Louis area is different. It's different from all the other places that I've done radio. It's just because of the people, and Tom's a good example of that. Got to run, Tom. Lenny, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, question on temperature. My old man's coils are 15-pound temperature set, but the temperature will not go over 192. So I put in a 16-pound stat and still won't go over 192. What is the problem? With these 110-degree temperatures, I can't get the temperature over 192. And I think that's related, makes me for poor gas mileage. Am I right?
Okay. Well, what kind of car are we talking about?
Well, two Buick LeSabre that got that wonderful 3.8-liter V6 engine of General Motors.
What year?
02.
Okay.
Got 62,000 miles on it.
Okay.
62,000 miles.
I think it's possible that the thermostat stuck open. I think it's possible that somebody put a 180 in there.
I changed them. I took the 15-pound out recommended for the orange man and put in the 16-pound.
No.
It doesn't make any difference.
We're not talking about the same thing. You're talking about the radiator cap. I'm talking about the thermostat. We put coolant under pressure to raise the boiling point. That's why we have a 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-pound cap. is that helps raise the boiling point of the pressure of the liquid that we've got in our cooling system.
We got about 1 minute,
the,
Mark.
The 16-pound cap won't make any difference at all in the temperature.
Well, what does?
The thermostat opens at 195, and that's the first time it opens. And then at that point, the coolant gets hotter. So if you want it, here's what you do. And this is how I would do it. I would literally take the upper hose off, and I'd aim it into a 5-gallon bucket first thing in the morning, and I would start it up, and I'd rev the motor up one time and shut it off. If there's any water that comes out of that hose, then the thermostat is stuck open, or it's not even in there. So it should not move fluid through the upper hose into the radiator until the thermostat opens. This is a really big, it's no big deal. Again, if you want to make a mess, upper hose off, put it in a 5-gallon bucket, start it up, rev it, shut it off, and if water comes gushing out of there, there is no thermostat, or the thermostat is stuck wide open. Mark at MarkSalem.com if you want to ask a car question. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me.